Okay, so here's the, they've given me four lectures, and so here's the rough outline of how life is going to go. In lecture one, you'll have an introduction to homogeneity. And since this business involves a lot of notation, it's going to be really, you'll think a lot of it's just really trivial, okay? But that's okay. In lecture two, which is going to be completely disjoint from lecture one, we're going to do some parameterizations via Bruhat-Titt's theory. And I didn't write out parameterizations because we're in Canada and I don't remember how to spell it here. Lecture three, we'll return, we'll combine lecture one and two, and then we'll discuss an actual homogeneity result along with an application. And then lecture four, we'll do some extremely interesting calculations, things one would not think one would be able to calculate, but one can. And of course, office hour. Okay. So we begin. So what is the meaning of homogeneity? So in this context, it actually apparently is much, it comes from statistics. And here's how it arises there. So suppose you have two distributions. Let's call them T1 and T2. And suppose you have some sample space. Call it X, then these two distributions, T1 and T2, are said to be in a state of homogeneity if the restriction to the sample space X of the distribution T1 is equal to the restriction to the sample space X of the distribution T2. Probability distributions, statistics. I don't know any statistics. And I don't know that statisticians actually use the words in this way, but this is the way Webster's Dictionary gives it to you. So for us, right, our distributions are going to be linear maps from the locally constant compactly supported functions on some p-adic group G into the complex numbers, or the Lie algebra version, locally constant compactly supported functions on the Lie algebra here into the complex numbers, and our sample space, well, that's going to be some subspace of, well, either the locally constant compactly supported functions on G or on G. Okie doke. And so we'll take some distributions and we'll say that they're in a state of homogeneity if, when you restrict them to whatever subspace of functions you're interested in, you have an equality. It's okay. Let's do an extremely trivial example. So let's consider GL1. Or if you're ambitious, any torus. Okay. The important point is it's a billion. So let's establish some notation, which unfortunately probably is not shared with any previous speaker. So K is a non-Archimedean local field of characteristic zero. So it's some finite extension of QP. And then we let R, not O, denote the ring of integers. And we have the prime ideal P, the uniformizer of R pi fixed. So the prime ideal is just var pi times r. Okay. So let's do the group version. Of homogeneity. So what do we have? We have GL1K. That's really just the invertible elements of K. And that contains the invertible elements of R. And then you have a filtration of compact open subgroups all the way down to the identity. Okay. And suppose that you have a smooth admissible representation of GL1. So suppose you have a unitary character. All such representations that we're interested in turns out to look like that. And then we consider the distribution. So it's going to be a map from the locally constant compactly supported functions on K cross into the complex numbers, and we're going to send F to chi at F, which in this case is just the integral over K cross, chi at X, F at X, dx, and dx is a Haar measure on K cross. Okie doke. Oh. So in back, if I put this down, you can't read it, right? Okay, let's suppose that chi has depth m, which we'll take to be greater than 0. So what does that mean? That means that the restriction to 1 plus p to the m plus 1 of chi is trivial, while the restriction to 1 plus p to the m of chi is not trivial. And we note that if the support of F is contained in 1 plus p to the m plus 1, then chi at F, this guy here, is just the integral over f. Right? So you might as well, if you're considering functions f which are only supported on 1 plus p of the m, well, since chi is 1 on pm plus 1 plus pm plus 1, you might as well just use the trivial character. Okay? So we've just proved that the restriction to functions which are supported on 1 plus p to the m plus 1 of the distribution chi is equal to the restriction to functions supported on 1 plus p to the m plus 1 of the trivial representation. And that's a homogeneity result. Okay? It gets way harder. Okay. So now let's consider the, so there's one remark that's going to be extremely important. So this was the positive depth situation. So we say that chi has depth 0, provided that the restriction to 1 plus p of chi is trivial. And we have, no condition like this, that the character actually be non-trivial, say on R cross or something like that. also this equation remains valid. Yeah. And also note that, of course, R cross is GL1R, and R cross mod 1 plus P is isomorphic to F cross, where F is the residue field, which is GL1F. So now we consider the Lie algebra version. Okay, so the Lie algebra of GL1, okay. Okay, and suppose that T is a distribution, so this is the notation for the set of invariant distributions on K. Of course, invariant has no meaning here because the group is abelian, so it's actually any distribution on K, and the reason we use the letter J is because when Roger Howe was inventing all the notation for this part of the field, I was already used, and so J was the next letter. Okay. So if you have F, a compactly supported function on K, invariant with respect to the lattice piece of M, and if the support of your distribution is contained in PM, then you notice that, well, T of F, that's equal to, since T is linear, that's equal to the sum over X representatives of the coset space K mod P to the M, T at the characteristic function of X plus P to the M. Sorry, I forgot. Let's put it out here, f at x times that. But of course, t has support in p to the m, so this is just equal to f at 0 times t of, well, whatever it is on the characteristic function of the lattice p to the m. And of course, that is the orbital integral for 0 evaluated at f times this number. So in this case, the homogeneity statement looks slightly, but not really, more sophisticated. We get that the restriction to functions which are compactly supported and invariant with respect to the lattice p to the m of distributions which are supported on p to the m is equal to the restriction to the same space of functions. And here we have the one-dimensional space of distributions. You just take the zero orbital integral and all multiples. It's okay. So maybe I didn't say what this was. Oh, no, I did say. So these would be the invariant distributions on K support Peter's it. F at 0, it's mu sub 0 at F. Right. So mu, so if X is any element of whatever Lie algebra you happen to have, then mu sub X at F is the integral over the homogeneous space G mod C G X F at GX GG star. So in particular, when you have 0, this is trivial and you just have F at 0. Oh, because T has support in P to the M, so the only coset, only the trivial coset shows up. So what does it mean to be a distribution? So T, a distribution on G, provided that T is a linear map. From C, C infinity, G. Good. Now at Harvard, I had Marty always heckling me, so you can heckle me all you want. I've seen the worst of it. Well, invariant means nothing here because the group is a billion. But invariant, correct, yeah. Yes. Good. I'll write that over here. Okay, so what is the main idea? The main idea is what we really hope for is something of the following form. You restrict to some function space some fairly arbitrary distributions, and you hope to set up an equality with restriction to the same function space of some, okay, so well understood distributions. So in this example here, well, they can't be too bad, but you can imagine that they can be pretty nasty. But this is really easy, right? Evaluation at 0 is a very easy distribution. Okay. Okay, so that's the end of the easy stuff. Now we're going to kind of look back a little bit. So this will be a pre-homogeneity result. And an application. And the application itself is one that we're going to, I hope by the end of the four lectures, actually get a really nice version of. And the pre-homogeneity is just, well, it's where all this stuff originally came from. So let's establish some notation. So, for simplicity and no other reason, we're going to let G be the group of k rational points of k split, and we'll take it to be defined over the integers, a semi-simple algebraic group. G will be the Lie algebra of G. To save lots of chalk, if X is in G and G is an element of the group, then G, superscript G on the left, X, is the image of X under the adjoint action for G. And if S is a subset of the Lie algebra, then we denote GS. This is the set of all GS's, such that little s is in big S and G is in G. And S with a line over it is just the topological closure of S. Okay. So, the very, very first homogeneity result, pre-homogeneity result, is the following result. It's known as Howe's conjecture, although it's actually a theorem. It was proved for GLN by Howe himself, and then for all other groups by Harishchandra. And, right, so that's in this area of mathematics, so you're going to have a whole bunch of lectures about the fundamental lemma, which is not in no way a theorem, right? But Howe's conjecture is a theorem, whatever. So if L is any lattice in G, and omega is any compact subset of G, then Howe's conjecture says that the dimension as a complex vector space of the restriction to functions which are compactly supported on the Lie algebra and invariant with respect to the lattice L under translation of the distributions supported on the closure of G omega, this thing has finite dimension. And with this result, you can prove all kinds of wonderful things. For example, you can prove that, so it's known to be true that even when your field has positive characteristic, that a character is represented by a locally integrable function on the regular semi-simple elements. But using this result, at least when the field has characteristic zero, you can actually show that it's represented everywhere on the group by a locally integrable function. So this is not a homogeneity result. Well, because there's no right-hand side. Okay, so here we have our fairly arbitrary distributions restricting the sum function space. What we really want is some well-understood distributions restricted to the same space on the right-hand side. Okay, but it's still good. And you have the following application. Oh, right, so I should be. Before we get to the application, maybe I should present an example. So let's suppose that G is GL1K. Then we have that the restriction to functions supported on K and invariant with translation by the lattice p to the m of distributions supported on p to the n. We're interested in the dimension of this thing. So we know it's finite, but in this case you can actually say exactly what it is. So it's the number of elements in the residue field to the n minus m if n is greater than m, and it's 1 if n is less than or equal to m. And that's an exercise for you to verify. Okay. So here's the application. So suppose H is a Cartan subalgebra of the Lie algebra G. So that just means it's the Lie algebra of some maximal torus, which is defined over K. And then we set H prime equal to H intersect the set of regular semi-simple elements in G. F is the residue field. It is the same F. Oh no, that's a function F. This F has this thing on the end. Yeah, it will get even worse tomorrow. There's going to be like many, many G's floating around. Okay, so you do this, and then you consider the following map. All right, so I'm implicitly assuming that you've been here for the last 2 weeks and this is all okay with you. Yeah? So you have a map from H prime across the functions which are smooth and compactly supported on the Lie algebra to C. And what do? We send H, F to mu sub H hat at F, which remember is just the orbital integral with respect to H of the Fourier transform of F. Okay. Eventually we'll have to be very careful about what we mean by all these things, but not today. Okay. Careful in the sense that we'll want to take the appropriate measures everywhere. So we have this map, and there's two ways to think about this map. So the first way you can think about it is you can fix H. Well, there's at least two ways, okay? And two. There are two ways, too. Okay. Fix H and you vary F. And this way you get a distribution on G, right? It's just the orbital integral mu sub H. Hat, mu sub H hat. Okay. So from Harishchandra, we know that the distribution mu sub h hat is represented by a locally integrable function, which we also call mu sub h hat, on the regular semi-simple elements of G, i.e., for all functions f, which are locally constant and compactly supported on the regular semi-simple elements of G, we have that the distribution mu sub h hat at f is equal to the integral over G f at x, mu sub h hat at x dx. Okay, this is a fairly deep result, but it's true. The other way to think about it, of course, is to fix S and vary H. Okay, so in this way, you're looking at a locally constant function on H prime. What's the point of doing this? The point of doing this, in some sense, is that you reduce non-abelian harmonic analysis to abelian harmonic analysis, which sometimes is easier. So combining one of these two ways to think about it, it's natural to ask, how does the distribution mu sub h vary with changes in h? Mu sub h hat, sorry. Okay. And so you have the following lemma, theorem, maybe, due to Harishchandra. And it says the following. For all regular semisimple elements of the Cartan subalgebra H, for all compact open subsets omega and G. Okay, so given H and given omega, there exists compact open neighborhood omega sub H and H prime containing H, such that mu sub h prime hat at y is equal to mu sub h hat at y. For all compact open, I want the subset omega to be in the regular semi-simple elements. So mu sub h hat prime at, so this guy equals this guy for all y and omega, for all h prime and omega h. Okay? Sorry, yes, I was even told before I couldn't do that. Okay. So it turns out that this is actually a homogeneity statement. And the local constancy of the Fourier transform suborbital integrals plays a huge role in lots and lots of things in harmonic analysis. And perhaps, but I doubt it, we'll get to actually see some of those things before the last lecture. Okay, so let's prove this. The proof is just linear algebra. So it's locally integrable. So actually, sorry, I'm being so careful. You can just say it's a locally constant function on the regular semisimple element. In characteristic zero. I'm not used to so much restrictions on life. Okay, so we prove it. So let's call this statement down here, let's call this statement, I guess we're up to 3 stars. So let's fix H and H prime and omega and G as in the statement of lemma, in the lemma. So equation 3 is true. If and only if what? Well, if and only if it turns out that the restriction to functions, which are locally constant and compactly supported on omega, of mu sub h prime hat, is equal to the restriction to functions, which are locally constant and compactly supported on omega, of mu sub hat h. I mean, if these functions are going to have the property that they actually represent the distribution mu sub h hat on that set, you have to have this equality. So that's true, if and only if the restriction to functions, well, the Fourier transform of whatever that space of functions is, of mu sub h prime, is equal to the restriction to the same space of functions of mu sub h for all h prime and wh. And of course that's true, not if and only if, but it's certainly implied by the statement that the restriction to functions supported on G and invariant with respect to some lattice L of mu sub h prime is equal to the restriction to the same space of functions of mu sub h. Where this L is chosen, of course. Right. So in the p-hatic case, when you take the you have a function with a certain kind of support and a certain kind of local constancy, you take its Fourier transform, the two roles get interchanged. Okay? And so here the L is chosen. And we can do this because omega is a compact set. Okay, so this looks suspiciously like something we can apply Howe's conjecture to, because after all, both of these distributions live in J of G omega H. Right, it's an orbital integral. So certainly its support is going to be contained in the closure of the set. So note that, and that Howe's conjecture says that the dimension as a complex space of the restriction to CCG mod L of the distributions supported there is finite. No, I'm saying assume triple star is true. Okay, so now it's really just linear algebra. So fix any omega h by Howe's conjecture. There exists h1 down to hm in omega h of course, H has to be an element of omega H, such that, well, first off, the mu sub H I's, so the restriction to CC G mod L of mu sub H I, these guys are linearly independent, and the restriction to functions which are supported on G and invariant with respect to L of mu sub H prime belongs to the span. For all H prime. Okay, we're just using the fact that this space is finite dimensional. And so since that space is finite dimensional, well, if you look at the image of all mu H primes when you restrict them to the space of functions, then that's going to span some finite dimensional subspace of this. And so therefore, you can produce a basis. So then choose a dual basis. So let F1 down to Fm be elements compact with supporter on G and variant with respect to L, such that mu sub H I Fj is delta Ij. Then you notice that if F is any function here, then mu sub H prime of F is going to be given by the sum from 1 to m of what? Mu sub H prime, how's this go? Mu sub H prime of Fi, mu sub Hi of F. Because when I stick in, say, F sub j, then this is 0 except when I is j, and so you get the plot. Well, now we're done. So shrink omega h so that mu of right, so that mu of H prime Fi is equal to mu sub H of Fi for all I and for all H prime. We can do this because these things are locally constant. Orbital integrals. That was the second point about that map, was that the restriction, when you fixed f and you just looked at that thing as a function on h prime, then it was locally constant. So then, for all f, which are compactly supported on g and invariant with respect to L, we have mu sub h prime of f. Well, that's the sum of mu sub h prime of fi, mu sub hi of f, and that's the sum of mu sub h of fi, mu sub hi of f, and that's just mu sub h of f. And so we're done. So this is probably the worst proof we'll do. But it was the only kind of accessible application of Howe's conjecture that I could find. And it's also going to be the one that we actually generalize in the end. And now I want to talk about something completely different. All right, so to summarize, what did we just do? We used Hall's conjecture, which is kind of a pre-homogeneity result, and we used that to show that given a Cartan subalgebra and given a regular semisimple element of that Cartan subalgebra, we can find some neighborhood so that essentially the so that the associated Fourier transforms of the orbital integrals are independent of which H you choose, as long as you're careful about what that means. Okay, so the final part of this lecture is what words did I use before? The well-understood distributions. On the right-hand side of the homogeneity statement. Okay, so remember we had the statement. It was written over here, and it said that restriction to some function space of some fairly arbitrary distributions is equal to the restriction to some function space of some well-understood distributions. So Hall's conjecture says that whatever you put on the left hand, on this side of the equation, is always going to be it's always going to be a finite dimensional space. And now what we want to do is actually relate it to something that think we understand. Okay, so this is, you should think of this only as motivation. Because we're going to look at SL2R. And it's Lie algebra SL2R. So, as vector spaces, you have an identification of R3 with SL2R, where in my notation you're going to send the usual triple XYZ to the matrix M of X, Y, Z, which is equal to X, Y plus Z, Y minus Z minus X. Yeah. So also I should say there's probably, you know, I've been traveling for a while, and probably Lang's book on SL2R or something does a much better job of what I'm about to do, but I didn't have access to such things. So when you go and you compute the characteristic polynomial of M, X, Y, Z, you find that it's T squared minus X squared plus Y squared minus Z squared. And so I don't have to write this quantity all the time. We'll call that quantity alpha. So this leads to three types of elements. Depending on what alpha is. So if alpha is 0, then we call the element nilpotent. If alpha is greater than 0, then we call the element split, regular semisimple. And if alpha is less than 0, then we call this element elliptic, regular semisimple. And because we're in SL2, that's all that happens. So also note that we have F1 embedding into SL2. to r in the usual way, right? Theta goes to cosine theta, sine theta, minus sine theta, cosine theta. And in fact, the image is an elliptic r torus. So under add, let's call this element, say, g theta. So under add, we have that add g theta of m x y z is equal to m of r cosine theta prime minus 2 theta r sine theta prime minus 2 theta and z, where r is, of course, the square root of x squared plus y squared, and theta prime is whatever it has to be. So x is r cosine theta prime, y is r sine theta prime. Okay? So if you take any point in the Lie algebra, which we think of as being just R3 as a vector space, and you act on it by S1, what happens? Well, as S1 goes through one revolution, this thing goes around twice. Okay, so now we draw some pictures. So let's start with the nilpotent guys. So in this case, alpha is 0, and so the equation for the nilpotent orbits is just z squared equals x squared plus y squared. Okay, so that it's really a cone. It's a nilpotent cone. Okay. And so now what we want to do is we want to study the action of SL2R on the set of nilpotent elements. Okay? So from Jacobson-Morosov, you know that for all nilpotent x, so my symbol for nilpotent, that math cal n denotes a set of nilpotent elements in the Lie algebra, there exists a one-parameter subgroup such that lambda t x is t squared x for all t in R. Okay. You combine this with the S1 action. It gives you that there are at least three orbits. Right? Because... Huh? Whatever. So do I. But it doesn't... That's not... just wait. So you have at least three, right? Because t squared, the image of t squared is just the positive real numbers, and so that's, if you start with something up here, you scale this way, but of course you can go around the circle this way. And if you start down here, you scale that way, and if you begin at the origin, you stay at the origin. Okay? So, and in fact, there are three. Here's an important point. So each of the orbits, right, so important point is from Jacobson-Morosov, so it follows that if you have an orbit O, then t squared of O is O. Okay? So that means that mu O of F t squared has to be equal to some constant times mu sub O of F, where F t squared at x is defined to be F of t squared x. And in fact, this constant here is t to the minus dimension of the orbit. So we have this. We also know, however, that the orbits are, of course, orbits. And so they're invariant. The distribution you get is invariant with respect to the action of g. So mu sub O f of g is equal to mu sub O of f, where fg at x is fgx. So the one thing you don't want to confuse here is that Jacobson Morisot tells you that for every x, you can find a one-parameter subgroup so that it acts on that thing by t squared. But that one-parameter subgroup does not work for all x in the orbit. Okay? So that's why you have these two different things. So as an exercise, show that if p is odd, there exists, five nilpotent orbits in SL2k. And if p is even, then it will depend on the ramification degree of k over q2. So how about the rest of the elements? I'm essentially out of time, so just I'll use this picture here. So if you want the split guys, then they look something like this. Where this intersection here is the square root of alpha. Okay? And so these are the split regular semisimple guys. And if you're interested in the elliptic regular semisimple guys, then they look like something like this. Okay. Where this point is minus the square root of minus alpha. And this point here is the square root of minus alpha. And these are hyperboloids, so they're actually asymptotic to the nilpotent cone. Okay? So as you travel out on those things, you get closer and closer to the nilpotent cone. So now let's suppose that we don't have R. Okay? Let's suppose that you can actually draw such a picture for p-adic things. Okay? Just, you know, pretend. So what is a lattice? A lattice is really some kind of neighborhood at the origin. Okay? So we're interested in those distributions. So we start with some omega, okay? Right? In the statement of Howell's conjecture, it's the restriction to CC, let's look at this statement, G mod L of J G L closure. Let's look at this. Okay, so here's L. Okay? Now you take the orbit of L, what happens? So you start with L, and what happens is that these things asymptotically approach the nilpotent cone, right? So the right, and you have to revolve that thing around. Okay, so you get some kind of neighborhood of the nilpotent cone. Okay, Now, we're only interested in looking at these distributions on functions which are locally constant with respect to the ball L. Well, heck, I mean, if my picture's good enough, right, you can cover this whole thing with like this, right? So the local constancy is somehow completely absorbed, or it covers everything, so to speak. And so that makes you think, what? That makes you think that this should be equal to the restriction to the same set of functions, and here you only want to consider those distributions supported on the nilpotent set. Yeah? And so that's the end of motivation. So I encourage you to think about that.